This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martorano. We're here on Saturdays. This time, we talk about the disease of addiction and the paths to recovery. The whole thing sponsored by Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. As is so often the case, we reach out to the people at Retreat when we want to talk about something specific from an expert point of view. That's what we're going to be doing, by the way, in the next couple of programs here on Recovery Radio. We are going to focus on one particularly troubling and very cruel aspect of the gigantic opioid problem we have in this country right now. It should come as a surprise to no one that with the size of the opioid epidemic, that there would be a corresponding rise in women who are abusing it and getting pregnant simultaneously. This month, a couple of programs are in the pipeline now to discuss just that issue of pregnancy and substance abuse. So it's an important issue, and as I said, there's nothing good from any aspect about substance abuse, but the idea of babies born addicted to opioids is particularly cruel and troubling. So we're going to take a look at some of the work that's being done here at Retreat regarding that. To that end, we welcome Dr. Christy Dively with us. Dr. Dively has been here at least one other time here on Recovery Radio. And at Retreat, she is the physician in residence for obstetrics, which is hard for me to say, and gynecology. Dr. Dively, thanks for joining us again on Recovery Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Did I get that right? That the size of the problem is in relationship to the overall problem with opioids?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, as the problem grows, and it's not just opiates. I mean, we have pregnant women abusing alcohol and nicotine and benzodiazepines. So as the numbers are growing for addiction, then the numbers are growing for pregnant women who are addicted.
Tell us about the procedure that goes on, because just before we came on, you told me something that I was not aware of. When a young woman comes in for treatment, are they routinely tested for pregnancy?
Yes. Every woman of childbearing age has a pregnancy test on admission.
And that's how you're finding it. A lot of these people finding out the first time, right?
Yeah, we're finding a few of them because Retreat has been promoting itself as taking pregnant patients. We do have a good deal of them who come in already knowing that they're pregnant. But we do once in a while tell somebody that they're pregnant that was unaware.
Yeah, I want to find out what happens at that point, because now you've got two issues that have to be addressed, obviously. Mm-hmm. You've got your garden variety pregnancy coinciding with an addiction problem. One of the things that I think would maybe stop a young lady from getting treatment is just that fact. I'm pregnant. I shouldn't do – I can do this by myself. Is that common?
It's definitely common. There's a lot of societal pressure on pregnant women who are using, just like with anybody else. People who are not involved in people who have addictions don't understand it's not as easy as just stopping. You know, everybody says, well, you're pregnant, just stop. Well, it's not that simple. Your brain in somebody who's addicted to opiates, their brain is screaming at them to mm-hmm. go find drugs. Mm-hmm. It's not a willpower thing. There's brain chemistry changes. So certainly there is some, well, I can do this on my own. But even more so, it's the societal stigma of treatment.
You know, we know we've been breaking down over the years that stigma that there's some character flaw associated with substance abuse, and that's what drives it. These are bad people doing bad things. Stop it. As I said, those barriers and that stigma is coming down slowly, but coming down. I'll bet you it still lingers to a great degree when we're talking about a pregnant woman, because why would you do that? Maybe you'll do that to yourself. But why would you do that to your baby, right?
Absolutely. And people don't understand that it's not a conscious decision. Once you become addicted to a substance, that you no longer are making those choices. Your brain is screaming at you to do that.
People really have a difficult time with that in general, but they particularly have a problem with that in terms of pregnancy. You see it all the time, even without, you know, the drama of a substance abuse problem. I mean, do we see women smoking anymore who are pregnant? Strangers will come up to them and say, don't do that, right?
they still do it, but it certainly has cut back, you know, compared to what it was in the 70s before we understood what nicotine could do to a pregnancy. But there are certainly still women who smoke out there.
And these young women are under a kind of additional burden. They've got to get themselves straightened out vis-a-vis the substance abuse problem. And then they have to deal with this, I'm a bad mom or I'm a bad person stigma. Does that stop them very often from even trying to get treatment?
I think for some people, it might stop them from trying to get treatment. But for others, it's the impetus for treatment and the impetus to stay sober. There's some pretty good statistics out there that women who seek treatment while pregnant have really high sobriety rates 1 year after delivery.
And does a baby account for that, do you think?
I think some of it is, okay, I have a child now. I need to – it's not just me anymore. Some of it is the techniques we're using for treatment in pregnant women, because medication-assisted treatment is the recommendation. And certainly we're starting to see that people have higher sobriety rates with medication-assisted treatment rather than without.
I want to talk about that in depth a little bit down the road here. That's referred to as MAT now, M-A-T, but we'll find out about that. Generally speaking, what kind of shape are these young women in when they arrive at a treatment facility like Retreat? In general, what is their health like in addition to being pregnant?
In general, many of them have avoided seeing an obstetrician or seeing a physician with the pregnancy because of the shame and guilt of I'm pregnant and I'm abusing a substance. So many of them have not had any prenatal care. Their only ultrasound may have been in the ER when they had bleeding or cramping. Very few of them have been taking prenatal vitamins. Sometimes even when they do have prenatal care, their doctors have steered them in the wrong direction and said, oh, you're pregnant. You need to stop taking your psychiatric medications. And for somebody who's requiring those medications to be stable, that's the last thing we want them to do is to stop the medications. That's more likely to contribute to their drug use.
I would guess that their general health outside of the pregnancy is also not great, right?
In general, patients who come in for treatment or patients who are abusing don't have great health to begin with because they are avoiding the doctor.
And they're not eating?
And they're not eating.
Sometimes they're homeless?
Sometimes, very frequently, they're homeless. They're doing things to get the drugs that put them in an unsafe environment and unsafe situations. So they're very commonly not healthy when they come in.
Our guest on Recovery Radio this week is Dr. Christy Dively. Dr. Dively handles obstetrician work and gynecological work here at Retreat, as you heard her say. A young woman comes to Retreat, and I'm sure many, many other treatment facilities. And the first workup that's done among that is a pregnancy test to find out whether they're with child. It's happening more and more frequently with greater use and abuse of substances. And Dr. Dively is here to tell us about how here at Retreat, at very least, they've made a concerted effort to not only look to help pregnant women, but get on the leading edge of how to treat this. So, Dr. Dively, what are some of the barriers that stop all this? It should be pretty straightforward. Geez, I'm abusing drugs, and I just found out I'm pregnant. I've got to get some help. What are the barriers that might stop that process from happening?
Well, there's so many barriers, and we can start with the insurance companies. More and more insurance companies are not wanting patients to have inpatient treatment. They're saying that outpatient treatment is sufficient, and it's really not. Not in any way, shape, or form.
You mean in general?
In general,
yeah, okay.
But I mean especially in pregnant women. There's the shame and guilt associated with I'm pregnant and I'm using. How am I going to admit to people that I'm putting my child's life at risk by using drugs or by drinking alcohol? Then there's the logistical issues. What if they have other kids? Who's going to take care of the other kids? How are they going to get to treatment? How are they going to pay their bills? How are they going to, you know, it's just all the everyday things that need to be taken care of, because if they're not taken care of, then she's in treatment, but she's not engaged in treatment because she's worried about everything else in her world.
And what about the law here? Are pregnant women who are abusing substances worried that the courts will take their children away from them?
They're absolutely worried that the courts will take their children away. Pennsylvania just ruled that a pregnant woman abusing substances cannot be prosecuted for harming her unborn child. But once the baby is born, if the baby is born and shows signs of withdrawal or signs of addiction, then the mother could be prosecuted. women who seek out treatment are certainly looked upon much more favorably than those who are out there and continuing to use. If women are following the prescribed course, getting their therapy, doing what they're supposed to be doing, certainly Children and Youth Services would be investigating. But most of the time, they, okay, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. Have a nice life.
So any fear of losing your child because of your substance abuse problem is a reality, but after the fact. It's not an immediate threat if you're during the pregnancy.
Right. It's not an immediate threat during the pregnancy, and that should not deter anyone right. from seeking treatment, because seeking treatment increases your chances of keeping your children.
Probably something not well known among the group of people that need to know that, right?
Right?
It's a scary proposition. I can't go tell them I'm pregnant. They'll take the baby away from me as soon as it's born. How many of these are there any reliable or figures on how many of these women are in relationships with men or they're not? Or what's your experience?
My experience with the patients that we have, I would say probably half to 75% are, if not in a in a relationship. It may not be a long-term committed relationship, but most of them are, you know, they know who the father is, and they have either a supportive situation or somebody's backing them up. But there are certainly a few that, well, it could be this one or that one.
Christy Dively, Dr. Dively is our guest on Recovery Radio this week. We're going to focus on the issue of substance abuse and pregnancy for the next couple of programs. It's an important and just a heartbreaking issue. Stay with us. We have more. This is Recovery Radio. Welcome back to Recovery Radio. Steve Martorano is my name. We're here on Saturdays talking about the disease of addiction and the many, many ways to get a handle on that and live a sober, successful, sober life. We're taking a look at pregnancy in light of substance abuse. It's a growing problem along with everything else regarding this topic. Dr. Christy Dively is with us. She is the obstetrician and the gynecologist here at Retreat, and so she has firsthand knowledge of what we're talking about here today. Dr. Dively, let's talk about some of the treatment options that you guys employ here that's available. First of all, there's got to be a lot of difference between treating somebody for substance abuse who isn't pregnant as opposed to someone who is pregnant. Is that true or not?
There isn't a ton of difference. I mean, we certainly – they're still getting the therapy. You know, it's the same therapy as everybody else, that dealing with their trauma, their loss, their addiction, their drug use. Sometimes we do try to gear it a little more towards the parenthood aspect of it. But it's not like the pregnant women are going to completely separate groups than the rest of the general population.
You know, people do not stay in a residency facility for 9 months. So what happens after their stay? How close do you remain with them, or do you send them off to their own physicians and own?
When they leave us, they go to another physician, but sometimes I keep in touch with them and sometimes I don't. I do try to follow up with every patient after their expected due date to get a follow up to see, did they deliver? Were they sober? How did the rest of the pregnancy go? But I do sometimes see patients throughout the pregnancy just because they've continued with Retreat's program and I run into them. But I'm not seeing them in a medical capacity.
During their time when they are under your care, you know, what are you looking at? Are you treating them as though – is it a separate issue, what I'm saying? Your specialty is obstetrics. So do you deal with them exclusively that way, or do you have to somehow treat the pregnancy differently because of the substance abuse piece?
You have to treat them somewhat differently, but it's still generally going to be the same medications, sometimes used in a different way, and the same prescribed treatment as far as therapy and things like that. Now, pregnant patients who come into Retreat, if they haven't had any prenatal care or they've had very little prenatal care, we're going to be sending them out to see a local OBGYN to make sure they get that prenatal care started. If they have not had any of the blood work done associated with the pregnancy, we are drawing it and we're making sure that they're getting the things done that need to be done. When they leave, we make sure that they have an appointment to follow up with their obstetrician. If they have needs, if they're at the appropriate point in the pregnancy, we send them to the high-risk OB doctor to have an ultrasound done to check the anatomy of the baby and make sure that there haven't been any complications from the drug use in the pregnancy.
Are they all – would seem to me they'd all be high-risk, wouldn't they?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. They are all pretty much high-risk, but the ideal time to do an ultrasound is between 16 and 20 weeks. So if they're not in that time frame, we aren't the ones referring them.
When we think of pregnancy and addiction, what first comes to mind with regard to the baby is they're going to be born addicted, and they often are. That's a separate issue, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But what stress or what dangers are is the baby in as a result of the substance abuse before it's born? You know, when it's in vitro,
the risks to the baby depend on the drug. So opiates actually do not cause birth defects. There's no evidence that it causes any kind of developmental delays or anything like that. With opiates, it's all the addiction that the baby's born addicted to the medication. Alcohol and benzodiazepines such as Ativan or Valium can actually cause birth defects. So there can be physical birth defects or there can be developmental birth defects, especially with alcohol. There's a whole problem called fetal alcohol spectrum disorder that is very, very widely studied these days. Nicotine is associated with an increased risk of miscarriage. So somebody who's a heavy smoker has a higher risk of having a miscarriage. There's a lot of different things that can happen.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit about benzodiazepines here for a minute, because they're often lost in the discussion because of the opioid situation. They're very dangerous drugs, aren't they?
They are very dangerous drugs.
I mean, in general, they should be taken very judiciously and under strict doctor supervision. But with pregnancy, they're really problematic, correct?
They can be if they're not being used appropriately. If somebody needs to take them for a very short period of time to manage a specific situation, they're still not great, but they can be done carefully. The problem is everybody has this view that benzodiazepines, oh, they treat anxiety. I always tell my patients they don't treat anxiety. They just make you not care that you're anxious. And if you use them for more than 2 weeks, they actually make you more anxious.
Yeah. Is that right?
Yes. They're not intended to be used every day forever. They're short term, like, I can't get on a plane because, you know, I'm going to lose my mind because I'm claustrophobic. Okay, then maybe that's the time you take a single benzodiazepine one time.
Yeah. And you are very often treating dealing with pregnancies in people who have emotional difficulties and have stress. And so we're going to get very deeply into what we referred to a moment or two ago as MAT, which is medicinal
medication.
Assisted treatment. Right. Thank you very much. We're going to take a break in a couple of minutes now, but real quickly, what is that? Tell us what that is.
Medication assisted treatment is the use of medications to help in the recovery process. There's several. Generally, we're talking about opiates, but there are also some medications that can be used for people who abuse alcohol. And the point of it is these medications help, in some cases, take their mind off the opiates so they can focus on the rest of their recovery, their therapy, and those kinds of things. Different medications have kind of different purposes.
Dr. Christy Dively is our guest. When we come back, more about MAT, which sounds an awful lot like fighting fire with fire. This is Recovery Radio. We have more. Don't go away. We're back on Recovery Radio, and we'll return to our guest, Dr. Christy Dively, straight ahead. But I'll remind you about Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers. And believe me, if this were a for-real infomercial, I could just go on at length about how good they are. But, you know, you check it out. Their reputation speaks for itself. They sponsor this program as an informational tool. That's purely why we give you their phone number. If you have any questions about substance abuse, about your treatment, about your insurance, about your pregnancy, about your loved ones, Retreat wants to be able to answer them for you. If they can help you, then certainly their facilities and their people are world class, but that's not why we give you the phone number. This is an informational tool. There will be someone who knows what they're talking about answering those questions for you. So here it is, 855-859-8808. Retreat Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, 855-859-8808. From Retreat, obstetrician gynecologist Dr. Christy Dively joins us again. This is our second trip here. It was a couple years back that we had Christy with us. I guess when you were first starting in retreat, talking about pregnancy and substance abuse, which, as we said at the beginning of the program, has grown in proportion to the problem that we're facing it. But women who get pregnant or who are abusing substances are abusing all kinds of substances. And one of the things that you and the people at retreat are now sort of in the forefront of is this notion of MAT, which is medication-assisted treatment. Tell us how that works with regard to pregnancy.
Well, medication-assisted treatment in pregnancy is a little bit different than it would be in just the general population. It is the recommendation of many, many different boards, including the American Society of Addiction Medicine and the American Congress of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, that a pregnant woman with an opiate use disorder should go on medication maintenance therapy and remain on it for the rest of the pregnancy. Now, whether that's methadone or a medicine called buprenorphine is kind of up to the facility, the patient, and a discussion they would have with their physician.
So the reason you state that sort of definitively is that this is the way we now treat this is because that in general – this is a relatively new shift in thinking, this MAT treatment, correct?
It is a shift.
To the overall
question. It's a shift in thinking for the overall population, but methadone maintenance therapy has been the standard of care for 50 years for pregnant women with opiate use.
Oh, it has
disorder.
Been. Okay. And so I would guess then, having that been the case for half a century, there is no downsides to women being on methadone during their pregnancies.
Oh, there's many, many downsides
to
it. But you have to weigh the risks versus the benefits. There's different medications that can be used. Methadone is one. There is another one called buprenorphine. Most people are swinging towards using buprenorphine because the ability to abuse it is lower and the risk of withdrawal for the baby seems to be less.
Who provides that to someone in treatment? Do you do that? Will you provide the methadone, or how does?
Well, at retreat, we are not a methadone program. So at retreat, we would use buprenorphine. If somebody wants to go on methadone, they would need to go to a program, an outpatient treatment program that would have methadone. For us at retreat, we use buprenorphine, and yes, we administer it to the patient. When they're leaving our care, we make sure that they have an appointment with a doctor who will prescribe it for them after they leave us.
You know, if anyone has been following this knows that, as I said, for the very longest time in the treatment world, this was thought to be something that was dangerous or not recommended, and that is you've got people who are abusing substances, drugs, and the like, and now you're saying use drugs to sort of combat that. Lots of people looked at that and said, well, that's substituting one addiction for another. Why was that never the case with pregnant women? I mean, they seem to understand the need to do this a long time ago.
Because when you're looking at addiction, you have to look at all the things that go along with an addiction. And in a pregnant woman, the risks of remaining in active addiction put way more risks on the baby than treatment with methadone would. All of the statistics, all of the research shows us that people who are treated with medication-assisted therapy tend to have higher recovery rates and higher success rates than people who are not. If you don't give a pregnant woman this medication, she could relapse. And if she relapses, she's at risk of intimate partner violence, prostitution, poor nutrition, infections. She could get a heart infection from injecting using a dirty needle. So there's a lot of risks that go along with continuing in addiction to the baby rather than versus the risks of buprenorphine.
Yeah. So ironically, this more enlightened approach to using drugs to fight drug abuse is a result of the baby.
Yes.
The existence of this other life.
Yes.
This innocent life. Because now, I don't know to the extent to which you're comfortable about talking about MAT in a broader context, but we're now seeing it outside of pregnant patients. We're seeing it a lot.
Absolutely. There's several different options out there. When you're talking about alcohol, people who abuse alcohol, now these are medicines we would not use in pregnant patients, but in people who are not pregnant, there's a medication that can be used that if somebody drinks alcohol while they take it, it will make them violently ill. And it's meant to be a deterrent against them drinking. There's two other medications that can be used that help with alcohol cravings. So it's a medicine they take every day. And if it just helps cut down on cravings.
Is that Vivitrol?
Well, it's now Trexone is the pill form. Mm-hmm. And then there's another one called Campryl. And then Vivitrol is the shot form of the one that helps with cravings in people who abuse alcohol. Now, we also use Vivitrol in people who abuse opiates. And that cannot be used in pregnant women. But what it does in people who abuse opiates is it blocks their opiate receptors. So if they go use, they don't get high. And the thought is if their body doesn't get the response they're expecting, they, what the heck am I doing this for, and can get themselves back on track.
You know what's been remarkable about watching this sea change in attitude about this within the treatment industry and the general population is first this notion that, well, you're just substituting one addiction for another, which is nonsense. And the other one, which I think the public has not yet got their mind around, and I would like you to talk about it, is that we're not talking about a magic pill here. I mean, there is no drug that's going to take the place of a lot of other work that has to be done, correct?
Absolutely. Let me tell you the science behind it a little bit. So buprenorphine is the medicine that is being used with more and more frequency, and it comes in several different forms. You may have heard it called Subutex or Suboxone or Sublocade or Bunavil or Zubsolve. There's several different brands out there. And what it does is in a person who is suffering from an opiate addiction, it partially binds to the opiate receptors in their brain. So it calms down that brain screaming at them to go find opiates because their brain wants dopamine. It also calms down the physical effects of withdrawal. So it takes away the vomiting and the sweating and the restlessness and all of those things. Because it does those things and because it's activating the receptors but not at the same level as the opiates, one of my partners likes to say it just takes opiates off the table. They're not thinking about opiates. They're not trying to figure out when their next opiate dose is going to be. Or even when they're in treatment, you know, even once they've been sober for a little while, this mental thing is still there. And a lot of patients that have been on medication-assisted treatment with buprenorphine for several months can say, I don't think about it. I'm not trying – my life is not revolving around getting opiates anymore. And it allows them to focus on going to groups, doing the recovery, doing the step work, doing all of the other things that are meant to help with recovery. It is not a magic pill, but it is a good tool.
Yeah, it's a great tool, but it's very important for people to understand – you're not going to take a pill or you're not going to get a shot that's going to make this stuff magically go away. But as Dr. Dively just said, it's going to at least give you a chance.
Yes.
To do the work that you're going to have to do. You know, as I'm listening to you describe the effects of and I've heard, you know, many times what happens when those drugs start saying, I need more. What's happening to the baby as it's being carried? Is the baby craving a fix, or are they stressed, or does that happen after they're born?
We do think there is some concern that as mom goes through withdrawals that the baby can be stressed. We don't know for sure because we can't do studies on unborn children, but we do think that there is stress put on the baby.
We just don't know to what extent.
Exactly.
Correct. And I know that it's not your field to talk about what happens after the baby's born. We're going to get into that with another guest later on. But generally speaking, this MAT treatment, when the baby's born, they're in what, much better chance of not being addicted and not being stressed out by that, or what?
Well, a mom who takes buprenorphine for her whole pregnancy, when the baby is born, the baby will be born with a tolerance to the buprenorphine, and the baby will have a withdrawal period and have some neonatal abstinence symptoms or syndrome is what it's called. However, everything we see shows that the effects with buprenorphine are much less severe than they would be with methadone or with opiates. You hear stories about babies of moms that were on methadone who were in the hospital for 3 or 4 months with withdrawal symptoms. With buprenorphine, it seems to be several days. A lot of hospitals, especially locally, the ones that I am aware of, they have a blanket policy that they keep the baby in the NICU for 2 weeks to monitor. But very few of the moms I've talked to have the babies actually had complications.
You know, and we're going to take a break here now and come back and wrap it up here today. But, you know, in addition to trying to, you know, get sober, the amount of work that's and attention has to be paid to the baby is can be just overwhelming. If a young woman is gotten it together enough to get to a treatment facility, they need to know what questions to ask, not only with regard to themselves, help me get sober, but they need to know what kind of treatment they're going to get for the baby, right?
Yes. Any pregnant woman who comes into our facility meets with me and we go over all the different things that need to be done and the things that need to happen. I coordinate with if they have had prenatal care, I reach out to their doctor and get the records and coordinate their care. So they have ample opportunities to ask those questions. And sometimes I make them think about questions that they didn't think of before.
Dr. Christy Dively is our guest here on Recovery Radio. We have one more segment. Don't go away. This is Recovery Radio. Hi, welcome back to Recovery Radio. My name is Steve Martirano. If you haven't found out about the program, we're here Saturdays, 6 o'clock, and we talk about the disease of addiction and the road to recovery. We, you know, in all the bad news, and there's a lot of it with regard to substance abuse in this country right now and in our society, we keep reminding people that millions get sober. Millions of people manage to get into long-term successful sobriety. So it can be done. It can be done. The program is dedicated to reminding people about that and sponsored by Retreat. From Retreat, Premier Addiction Treatment Centers, we have been talking to obstetrician gynecologist Dr. Christy Dively, who deals with that here with patients at Retreat, because we're going to dedicate a couple of programs to pregnancy and substance abuse, a growing problem, as you might imagine. So let's take you touched on it before we went to the break there about what happens after the baby's born, neonatal withdrawal symptoms. What are we looking at in your experience?
It depends on what they're withdrawing from. So everybody always thinks of neonatal abstinence syndrome as moms who use opiates or moms who use methadone. But you can actually have neonatal withdrawal from a lot of other substances. A big one is nicotine. Babies are born with a tolerance for nicotine and they go through withdrawal from it. Even some prescribed medications such as sertraline or fluoxetine, some of the SSRIs can have withdrawal. The more mild symptoms are going to be what we call autonomic, crying. They have this real high-pitched cry, sweating. Sometimes, once in a great while, they can even have seizures. But some of the more severe problems we see are that they have poor feeding, poor sucking reflex, so they don't feed well. So then they have poor weight gain. Sometimes they have difficulty regulating their body temperature. So there's a wide array of symptoms that a baby can have.
Does the management of those of the baby's condition change dependent upon what it is they're withdrawing from, or is it
yes.
all?
Yes, it does.
How do you identify what they're? Are you just because of the mom's history?
Mom's history, and then you sometimes are drug screening mom, or they can drug screen the baby if they're having trouble figuring out what it is. But yes, if a baby is having withdrawal symptoms from an opiate, sometimes they actually would have to use very small doses of opiates to help manage the withdrawal symptoms and kind of titrate them off. With nicotine, it's usually just more supportive care, quiet room, swaddling the baby, frequent feedings, IV fluids, things like that.
Yeah, we're going to talk to a neonatalist on more specifically on this issue, but it is interesting that the baby can be reacting to a wide range of things, and the treatment would be different in each and every case. So tell us about what can someone reasonably expect as an outcome from this sort of treatment, being pregnant and dealing with substance abuse?
The outcomes we see are actually pretty good for people who are pregnant and enter treatment. I don't know if it's because they now have another reason to try to stay sober, but all of this research shows that something like 70% of women who come into treatment and leave treatment on medication-assisted treatment are sober 1 year after they have the baby.
70%?
70%.
And there's been no studies on what the – it's too bad a lot of men can't get pregnant.
Yeah.
If there's a relationship. So someone out there who is struggling with the substance abuse – are they, in your experience, are they less likely to find out themselves whether they're pregnant because they're afraid of that? I mean, it just seems particularly cruel to ignore one because of the other. Do you know?
I think that they might be further along in the pregnancy before they figure it
out.
And
they're aware?
Yes, because a lot of women who are abusing drugs don't get a regular period, and that's generally going to be a woman's first indicator that they're pregnant.
In addition, as we know, they're not spending much time thinking about anything other than
how they're going to get their next drug.
How they're going to get high. Well, you know, so there's, I mean, with regard to a tough thing here, pregnancy and substance abuse, if you handle it like anything else, it sounds like there's a great deal of success that can be. What do we have evidence wise with regard to the health of the babies going forward? I know you probably don't follow them very long, but what are we seeing?
Again, it depends on what substance they were using. Babies of moms with an opiate use disorder do not appear to have any long-term effects, but certainly we don't know if that baby's at higher risk for addiction in the future. I mean, there's many, many studies that are ongoing for that.
And we know something like birth weight and stuff like that can be negatively impacted by tobacco and things
yes.
like that, right?
Babies of moms who are on medication-assisted treatment have similar outcomes to women with no substance use disorder. So birth weights are equivalent, mm-hmm. deliveries are equivalent.
So anybody who's listening to this who hasn't already gotten the message, quit smoking. That's a good piece of advice anyway. Well, Dr. Dively, thank you so much for your time here and shedding light on this. As I said, we're going to do a bunch of shows this month about that. And I know there's also going to be a kind of a panel discussion up here in the Lancaster County area that you will be part of.
Yes.
And a bunch of other people from Retreat, and I'll be there to moderate that. So I'm looking forward to that. Thanks so much for your time. You guys at home, thanks so much for listening. And as I said, if you know somebody who ought to be listening to Recovery Radio, please tell them about us. Have a great weekend and look for us next Saturday. Bye-bye.
This program is a paid commercial announcement and in no way represents the views of WPHT or its management.